My name is Suzanne Judson Whitehouse. I use she, her, hers pronouns. I am the online learning manager here at CES.
My name is Elke Burnside. I use she, they pronouns. And my role is instructional designer for the online learning team.
Welcome to Brilliant Minds, Caring Hearts, conversations with education's changemakers.
Throughout this series, we will get to hear from a variety of experts on topics that range from approaches for showing up authentically in educational settings, exploring ways to find joy in work that can often be difficult, developing strategies to approach learning with digital tools, including generative AI, and developing youth leadership structures. Each expert looks for ways to focus on the individual and center their humanity in our work. We are delighted to get to hear from many voices in this series. We'll let them introduce themselves to y'all.
I'm T. Sikova. I use they, them pronouns, and I'm an inclusive engagement specialist at CES.
My name is Laurel Peltier, and I use she, her, hers pronouns, and I am the curriculum and instruction specialist for professional development.
I'm Albert Johnson Musad. I use the he group of pronouns. I identify as the leadership and instruction continuous improvement specialist.
My name is Lisa Goldsmith. I use she, her, hers pronouns, and I am the SPIFFI coalition manager. I just learned a lot from working directly with young people when they were like well-meaning adults who would like bring them to services. It might not work out because the young person didn't really have a voice in this. And so we saw a lot of, I sort of saw over the years how we create a space for young people. I mean, we literally in an old job, we had drop-in space and it was just a place. They could come in, they could get a snack, they could use a computer, chat with somebody if they want to. And then we built those relationships and then they'd come saying, actually, I need help with something. And so I think it really has to be on youth terms. It has to be creating a space where young people can feel comfortable and asking for help and having those resources available versus this is what we think you need and we should do. They're not going to do it. And I don't think any of us would. So, you know, I think coming from that perspective and understanding that young people are incredibly capable of making decisions on their own and that we just need to support that. And they appreciate when there's adults and they appreciate more than just their parents because their parents come from one way, but other adults in the community that can be resources to them. So I think, you know, as we learn and sort of philosophically, our current team is really, we support that. Like mm-hmm. we understand young people are incredibly capable and we just need to like, what do you need? And be their ally and as they are growing up.
And our goal with this podcast is to find a way to share that at CES, we get to work on projects with brilliant, funny, and incredible humans. Without exception, they care deeply about teachers and they care deeply about students. They see the spark inside and want to help nurture that spark to grow and become a fire that warms the people around. So we're lucky and grateful to work with everyone here. And we want everyone else out there to get to bask in our glow. So this podcast is our way to help spread brilliance.
Hi, Sapphire DeYoung. I use she, her pronouns. I'm the co-director of the Joy and Justice in Schools program.
Hi, I'm Sabine Denise. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a social justice and equity specialist.
Hi, I'm Mariah Laparoff. I use she, her pronouns. I am a social justice and equity specialist.
Hi, I'm Tom Chang. I use he, him pronouns, and I'm the other co-director of the Joy and Justice program in schools.
We really encourage educators to think about their students that way, right? To rather than think about what needs to change or what goal do they need to meet, what are they already bringing to the classroom? What are they bringing that might be different than what you as the educator are bringing to the classroom or what other students are bringing? And how can we bridge those things together to create joyful learning communities? What might they be able to teach one another about the world, about their experiences? And how can we break out of the box of thinking that all students need to fit a certain mold in order to have assets? Every single student coming into the classroom has assets, and they might look different for different students, but we really want to focus on that.
I would add that One tool to use is also recognizing deficit-based thinking, and we tend to have a pretty deficit-based model around, you know, not just, like, administrators have a deficit-based model about themselves pretty much everywhere we go. That's what we see, and educators are the same, and so are students. And as a teacher, I really had a very strongly deficit-based model about my students, and that's how the whole structure is really set up, and it's really important to start to, like, pick out where is that happening. The way we do assessments is pretty deficit-based. And then our assumptions about students that are based on internalized stereotypes, also just full of opportunities for not seeing the inherent brilliance in ourselves or in our students, and to teach them to think in the same ways about themselves. So I think that's a really important tool, is to start to, like, recognize and unpack the ways in which the system is set up to be focus on what is wrong with kids. And just, like, a quick example of that is early in my teaching career, someone was really pushing back against my use of terms like my high students or my low students. And I kind of felt like, yeah, I get what you're saying philosophically, but you can take any group of students and sort of know who your high students and your low students are. And it took me a while to realize that, like, very strongly held belief is actually totally flawed, and that you don't actually have low students. You might have students that aren't, that don't know their combinations to 10, and that is a need that they have. But once you label a student your low student, you have a whole story about them and about how they're deficient and how they're not as much as a high student. And it's pretty surprising now that, you know, I feel so strongly about that, to see how entrenched that is and how strongly people hold on to their sort of right to know what they know about there being high students and low students. And that's like requires kind of a whole shift in thinking. And that's something our team kind of works on, is how can we support people to, like, have some cognitive dissonance where they're like, oh, like, that is a me problem, not a my students problem.
The Collaborative for Educational Services offers direct and support services to its 37 member school districts and to state and district-level clients and partners across New England. The work of CES includes a range of direct programs and services for children and youth, particularly those at risk, and professional development, coaching, and consulting projects for educators, schools and districts, and community organizations. We are excited to have this new way to share all that we are learning through the work that we do and from the people who do it.
So the Collaborative has a really clear mission that is aligned to practices of equity, diversity, inclusion, justice, and belonging. And one of the things that I find so exciting about online learning is looking for those ways to integrate those practices and those intentions from our mission in our work. Mm-hmm. And so our online learning conversations and the work that we do in online spaces is really grounded in relationships. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people don't necessarily have an experience with online learning that is based in that based in that foundation. Mm-hmm. So to me, this is a really exciting opportunity to get to work with a lot of people who do great work, very smart, funny, brilliant people who I learn so much from. And I'm excited to think about the ways that our online learning programming can really spread mm-hmm. the impact of that work.
Mm-hmm. My name is Casey Daigle. I'm the Digital Learning Manager here at CES, and I use she, her pronouns.
My name is Jose Lugo. I am the Native Education Liaison and Curriculum Development Specialist.
Hello, my name is Itza Martinez. I use she, her, and ella pronouns. I am Professional Services Learning Specialist.
You share this work aligns with your values and the person you aspire to be, and you mentioned that as a benefit toward both personal and professional growth. At the same time, you share that this is hard work. From your view, what is something good that's coming from this for you?
I am going to go the route of pragmatics for right now. And I want to very clearly note that that is definitely not the only aspect, but that's the first one that comes to mind right now. I have been someone who has a lot of border identities. And with socially constructed social identities, right, having a border identity means you're always negotiating if you're part of the in-group or out-group, and people trying to figure you out and you trying to figure yourself out. In terms of working, right, which is something that in this current time and space here in the U.S. you need to do in order to survive or have a certain kind of life, I have always found stumbling blocks, either with folks or not understanding what might be called the cultural capital or the social capital for whatever reason. I often think that it has to do with my border identities. It may not be, I don't know. That's what I've chalked it up to. And being able to be here, even though I am still in my identities, has been a place where I can navigate them and have a job where I am valued or I feel valued. And I haven't had that in other places of work. To be able to do work that matters to me, to be able to do it in a way that is considered unconventional, though some might argue that doing it in this way is the traditional way. To be able to do those things and hold those spaces for myself and for others has been a huge privilege, because I see so many people who have other border identities who don't get to do that, who have to silo themselves, shut themselves down or out, or conceal parts of themselves in order to navigate and be in systems. So having my new job title, having the opportunity to work with folks who are, the phrase is often like-minded folks, and I want to say that we are not like-minded in many ways. We are very different. We have totally different goals. We have different aspirations. We have different ideas about how to do things. But the one thing we agree on and that we keep going to and that we keep building on is that there's care and there's a desire to sustain the work over time with that care. And trying to do this in what might be considered a liminal interstitial space and looking at how those things can be moved out of the margins into the center so that more folks can benefit from that way of being. And to be able to be paid to do that, to have a schedule that aligns with my particular mix of identities, is something I've been searching for all my life. And I hope it stays for as many years as possible, because I don't want to lose it. It's very precious to me. I cherish the chance to do it. I cherish the relationships I have with the folks I get to work with. And I get to go home most days excited about the work I do. Do I have days where I don't want to go to work or things? I think that's just a human experience, to be honest. But for the most part, that the work doesn't feel like it's beating me down. For the most part. Is something that keeps me here. Because I can do something here I haven't been able to do elsewhere. With people who value doing things in that way enough to fund it. Which in our society right now, we fund and we hold and sustain in that way things that we think matter. And there's enough of it here at CES for me to be able to do that. And I'm really grateful for that opportunity.
Thank you for joining us for this first look at the fascinating interviews and expertise we'll be sharing in Series 1 of Brilliant Minds, Caring Hearts. We look forward to sharing more of this exciting series with you.
Please like and subscribe to help share the ideas and expertise from this episode. You can find us on Spotify and other podcast platforms. Twice a month, we will share new episodes. Resource links and other exciting news will be shared online at collaborative.org/brilliant-minds and on Instagram at ces.brilliantminds. Leave a positive review and tell us what you enjoyed the most. And don't forget to share the episode with others. Next time on Brilliant Minds, Caring Hearts, join us as we hear more previews from Season 1 guests.